Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It took 33 years, but an amateur has finally won on the PGA Tour. That's about the only headline, Rex, from the past week that could have overshadowed another victory by Rory McIlroy. We will get into all things Nick Dunlap in this here podcast. But first, Rex, you are clearly not in Longwood. You're in a place about 40 degrees colder, but no less hospitable. What are you up to this week?
18 degrees when I got in my car this morning. I'm in Connecticut, actually staying in Greenwich. NBC Sports' headquarters are in Stamford, which is just up the road. And if you look around, this is their grand meeting room. I'm not even quite sure what you would call it, but there's kind of a stage right there, and you probably won't be able to hear it, but there's three individuals who are just outside the door here. I'm going to slide the camera for the visual audience. Not sure if you guys can see that. Shoveling snow. That's right, folks. Shoveling snow. We talk about golf and the Coachella Valley and Dubai and Lake Nona and all the other beautiful places in the world. Here I am at the Garden Spot.
You got lucky in that this could have been a very dry 2 hours a day for the next 5 days. Instead, you have an absolute content bonanza, capped, of course, by Nick Dunlap, the amateur, becomes the eighth amateur ever to win on the PGA Tour, the first since Phil in 1991. Pretty heady company, because Nick Dunlap, if you're unfamiliar with him, 20-year-old sophomore from Alabama, became the first player since Tiger Woods to win both the U.S. Junior and the U.S. Amateur. And now he ticks off an accomplishment that was last done by Phil. Rex, you watched it from your posh hotel room in Greenwich, Connecticut. What did you make on a micro level of what we saw from Nick Dunlap? We'll certainly get into the macro complications moving forward.
On a personal level, the ADD kicked in because I was trying to do the two-screen thing because there was also, in case you didn't know, there was football going on at the same time. It was too much. I got overwhelmed, had to turn the football off. Going to go ahead and admit it. Throw it out there. I checked the highlights later to see what happened because I needed to focus on the golf because it was really amazing to me. It was fun. I talked to Nick's sports psychologist, who's Dr. Brett McCabe from Alabama, and this morning about it. And his comment to me was when Nick made the double bogey on 7, the fallout of the lead, he goes, "You guys probably wrote him off." And I said, "No, actually, that's not the case. I wrote him off after he made a par on the 11th, which is a par 5. Most guys were birding the hole. And I thought, okay, it's been a fun run, but it looked like Sam Burns was doing Sam Burns things and he was going to go on to win it. If not, Justin Thomas seemed like he was making a bit of a run. I just thought that there was so many other things going on that eventually the 20-year-old college sophomore would become a 20-year-old college sophomore. And that simply didn't happen. It was an amazing sort of walk. I said this morning, and again, just watching it and trying to, you know, dissect, as you pointed out, it from a macro level, like, when did I see him get nervous for the first time? And visually, I thought it was when he was walking from his approach shot on 18 to the green on 18, because if you notice, Justin Thomas was right behind him and he tried to make a little bit of small talk. I think the question was, is that
not the time.
And I think the question was, oh, is that the first time you hit a spectator? And I don't even think Nick answered him. He kind of turned around and
he actually had a great answer. He said he thinks he brained just about everybody when he played the U.S. Open. He played so poorly.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that. But it was clearly not the time. Like, well, I don't want to do small talk right now, JT. I appreciate what you're trying to do, but I need to focus on what's happening. It was, and look, you were just on Golf Today, and we had a really good conversation about this. You covered him in college. We had a chance to talk to Steve Bukowski, who has covered him in college. I thought the most fascinating thing I heard this morning came from you, saying that even if you look among today's college stars, he is a really, really good player, won twice at Alabama. He clearly has a bright future, but he's probably not the one you would point to and be like, yep, he can win on the PGA Tour right now. I think that's a testament to college golf, is it not?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I wanted to start this podcast by getting into the micro, because I think it's so important to celebrate what we actually saw on Sunday before we go into the projections for what it means going forward, how many majors he's going to win, if he should turn pro. We just got the news handed down by the PGA Tour that he has withdrawn from this year's Farmers Insurance Open, this week's Farmers Insurance Open. He was due to play that on a sponsor exemption anyway. Instead, he's going back home to Alabama to spend time, much deserved well time off with his friends and his family. But I think you touched on it from what we saw Sunday at PGA West. So he began the day with a 3-shot lead. Pretty heady company in the final group with him, whether it's Sam Burns, a 5-time tour winner, had just played in the Ryder Cup, Justin Thomas, Alabama boy, one of the best players of his generation. And you kept waiting for Nick Dunlap to blink. You mentioned the water ball on 7. You mentioned the kind of the clanky chip shot on 11, ended up settling for par. He missed birdie putts inside 7 feet on both 13 and 15. And yet the player who faltered late Sunday at PGA West was not this 20-year-old sophomore. It was Sam Burns. Sam Burns with the unforgivable sin on 17 to hit in the water on Alcatraz and then overcompensates on 18 and does it again, double-double to finish to blow himself out of the tournament. Time and time again, Nick Dunlap showed that he had the goods. Immediately after that double on 7 that put him into a share of the lead, he follows it up with a birdie. He matched Sam Burns' birdie on 14. He was the only player of the group who got up and down on 16. And I thought it was kind of an underrated crucial moment, getting the honor back on 17, hitting the ball first onto that very difficult par 3, applying all the pressure on Burns, who then was not up to the fight. I thought it was, I think given the circumstances, given the immediate competition in his group, given the historical stakes that he was competing against and competing for, like he authored one of the most incredible performance you could ever possibly fathom or imagine. Like it was that good Sunday on a micro level. Do you agree?
No. And I like the fact you wanted to start with the micro, because I do think there's something to be said for not just his performance, but how he handled himself. And again, this goes back to the conversation we had on Golf Today with Dr. McCabe, just about the idea. And I think my question was, so many college players, and you know this much better than I do, show up on the PGA Tour now as fully formed adults, for lack of a better term. They're going to get better. I mean, all pro golfers get better, but they show up, as we saw from Nick Dunlap, with all the tools they need in the box. Like, if you want to just show up and take all the emotion out of it, then he can hit every shot, every putt, every drive that he needs to hit in a PGA Tour event to go on to win. The difficult part is how you handle yourself in that situation. You're right. I was taken by the idea that Nick, the 20-year-old sophomore we keep falling back on, he performed like the guy who'd won 5 times on the PGA Tour, while the guy who won 5 times on the PGA Tour looked more like the amateur coming down the stretch. So it's amazing to me how he was able to compartmentalize, looking back when you sort of want to dissect and, again, as you say, get into the micro. The one time that he wasn't nervous was over the 6-footer on the 72nd hole. I don't understand that. Like, I can't process that. How is that possible? To me, that would have been the time that everything caught up with him and manifested itself the most. And I was thinking, and when he kind of blew it out to the right, his approach shot out to the right, needed to get up and down, I was thinking, man, this is where things get a little dicey. Like, this is, you dream about this your entire life, and you can't sort of hide from the moment any longer. You can do a good job of sticking to all the cliches and staying in the moment and doing your job, which, by the way, having Nick Saban on the telecast, I don't know about you, but it felt like a TED talk about halfway through that conversation. I either wanted to go play offensive line for the University of Alabama, which clearly I'm not qualified to do, or go play in a PGA Tour event. Again, not qualified to do, but it was a very inspiring talk. I think just the idea that he was never sort of ratcheted out of that shell. And when the pressure was the highest on the 72nd green, with 6 feet between you and really history, that you didn't blink. And that's when you felt the calmest.
A putt he has made hundreds, if not thousands of times, left center and poured it absolutely in the heart of the cup. Just an unbelievable performance. Showed everything that you need. I mean, the kid has all the tools. He's athletic. He's tall and lean. He's got the ball speed with the driver, 185. He hit some incredibly precise iron shots coming down the stretch, kissed one off the flag, laid on the back nine too. And then, as some of his teammates have said, and a couple of college coaches have texted me this morning. He's the best putter I've ever seen. So it's pretty clear that this guy has all the tools. Now, the college coaches who have texted me, some of the players I've heard from this morning, they're also, Rex, they also have a very familiar question, which is, where's the pro announcement? Everyone in the world thinks Nick Dunlap is going to turn pro. Per PGA Tour regulations, he was not able to collect the $1.6 million first place check for winning the Amex. Honestly, I'm not all that tied up about that. If his sponsors wanted to do that, if the Alabama boosters want to do that through the NIL, this kid could have tens of millions of dollars deposited in his bank account right now. Trust me, he is going to be quite all right with money. But it is, Rex, an interesting conundrum that he now finds himself in. And I said it on Golf Today during our hit, but on Wednesday night, on the eve of the American Express, there is no world in which Nick Dunlap thought that this was going to be his final week as a student athlete, as an amateur golfer. Instead, what happened is a history. He's now a history-making sensation on the PGA Tour, and his entire life is turned upside down. I kind of laid out the pros and the cons of whether he should stay or go on golfchannel.com in my last Monday scramble item. I hope you guys will check it out. But if you were, Rex, if you were advising Nick Dunlap on what he should do, what would you tell him?
Rest in power. Monday scramble. Are we going to touch on that real quick? Your last Monday scramble, because we're going to start doing what?
We're going to start doing a podcast on Sunday evening, just like every other podcast in the world. There's a reason why everyone records on Sunday night, because it can be available for you guys wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, iTunes, whatever, for your commute on Monday morning. Rex and I will start to do that moving forward. This week is the first week.
We will also have a preview podcast. So usually on sometime around Wednesday afternoon, I think is what we're going for. So that would have been how we kind of professionally sort of, you know, promote to that. But never mind, moving on. I will say that's one of your hotter takes that I've ever heard. And I was a little surprised to get it from you on Golf Today. And I'm glad I'm the one that had the follow-up question, because I was going straight to Todd Lewis, who was on the roundtable with you, because I knew he was going to come at it from a different angle. You actually took the take, and I'll give you credit, because I feel like there was at least part of you that believed that what you were saying, you truly wholeheartedly believe that he should stay at Alabama. And part of that equation is what you just pointed out. In the age of NIL, it's not as though he's probably leaving much money on the table, if we're being honest. I think the part you're sort of glossing over and forgetting, and we kind of had this conversation off air after you'd made the comment, is he doesn't have a lot of runway to make this decision. If he's going to do it, he needs to do it now and maximize his potential. And by that, I mean, if he does it now, he gets into all the signature events this season, including next week at Pebble Beach. And so why would you take 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever the case may be to decide if you're going to do this or not? And you're never going to have a better opportunity than this. Like, sure, you'll have opportunities in the future, but I don't know that there's ever been a player in this situation. But I'll take that back, probably going back to Phil Mickelson, and that was a much different age. We didn't have signature events back then. I don't know how you can make an argument with a straight face that he should actually go back to Tuscaloosa.
Oh, I made that argument.
You did. I don't know how you did it with a straight face.
And I actually believe it. I did couch it, I believe, by saying this is probably an unpopular opinion and that most people would think he's an idiot for going back to school. I always think, Rex, of like LPGA Q school for at least the past decade or two. If you sign up for that and you play it as an amateur, it's like gun to your head as soon as you finish. Like, hey, you need to play and turn professional right now. Like, your college days are over. If you want to play on the LPGA, if you want to accept this membership, you have to do so right now. And it was always like a sticking point. But at least players entered that week knowing that that was the possibility. If you're an elite college player and you signed up for that, you're probably like, yeah, I can get through here. I've said my goodbyes. If I play well, I've got things in order. I've got an agent. I know where I could potentially be getting starts, so on and so forth. This is a completely unforeseen circumstance where in the course of 5 days,
I would even say,
yes, unprecedented. Nick Dunlap his life has turned around on the eve of the final round, where he has a 3-shot lead at Amex. He's asked what he's going to do. And he said, I'm going to hang out with my girlfriend a little bit, and I'm going to figure out how to do laundry. I'm still trying to figure out how you do 2 weeks on tour when it comes to laundry and getting through. Like, there are so much bigger and weightier concerns that Nick Dunlap is going to have than how to do laundry when on the road for an extended period of time on the PGA Tour. I just think, and look, I get it. The case to turn pro is very obvious. He's now set up through 2026. He's got invitations in the first three majors. He could potentially even qualify for the year's final major in the Open. Now that he's 68th in the world rankings, I get it. He can go into the signature event series and set himself that way. He clearly has the game. However, Rex, I would just caution that this is all happening pretty quickly, right? His life just turned upside down. He has an agent already, Kevin Canning of GSC, but there is no way that those two had planned to turn pro at this juncture. And so there is still the potential, because his PGA Tour status is not going anywhere, he can still accept PGA Tour membership up until 30 days after the current season ends. He's already in the first three majors because of the U.S. Amateur victory. Why not, is my argument, why not go back to school, get your life in order, enjoy being a very famous college kid in a really fun college town, and try and tick off a couple more amateur accomplishments, whether it's becoming world number one, which he's never been before, whether it's winning an NCAA title with his Crimson Tide teammates, which he wants to do in his second season at Alabama. The PGA Tour is not going anywhere. That's why this is kind of an unprecedented situation. He has status through 2026. He can be in the signature events as soon as he turns pro in early June if he sticks it out for the remainder of his sophomore season. I just think it's so much so soon. Why not lay the foundation? Why not hit the brakes and then be ready to take on the world? Everything, all systems go in early June. I don't see the drawback.
Well, you say he would still be in all the signature events. I just think there's two signature events after he would turn pro, and that would be the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. Am I not right? Correct? Because he wouldn't be in the playoffs, so those wouldn't count.
He'd be in Memorial, and he'd be in the Travelers.
All right.
And then he could, I'm sure he'd be getting a bunch of sponsor exemptions as well. He would not be in
signature events necessarily, because those are your
right. But he wouldn't be exempt into the FedEx Cup playoffs, which I believe is the Akshay Bhatia rule from last year, correct?
Correct. And so when you say he would be in all the other signature events, you're only down to four signature events at that point. And so you've let the season pass you by. I get what you're saying. And I guess the argument is, what's the rush? The rush is he's not guaranteed to be in any signature events next year when he does take that tour card, or the year after that. And I think we talked at length about this, about if you were going to play well on the PGA Tour, 2023 was the golden ticket. That's the year you wanted to play well because of everything it means for this year. And the fact, and again, we've touched on this quite often, it's sort of going to become something of a closed shop. I think you and I are of the same mindset when it comes to that. It's going to get harder and harder to play your way in, and it's going to become more difficult for you to play your way out of that magical top 50 number and those signature events. You have an opportunity here where there has just been one signature event played so far this season to make a decision that gets you into all the rest of them. That's only going to set the stage better for 2025, 26, 27, and the rest of your career. I don't know what you think he's going to organize back in Tuscaloosa that's going to make him a better professional golfer than what he is right now. I think our colleague Todd Lewis offended car salesmen all around the world during our Golf Today hit when he made a snarky comment about, well, he's not at Tuscaloosa learning how to sell cars. Maybe not. Seems a little bit harsh, but I get where he's coming from. He's there to become a professional golfer. You may not like me saying this, but college golf is essentially just the minor leagues for professional golf. I mean, that's really what we're at. And because we're there, we end up with great stories like what we saw on Sunday at the American Express, that, as I pointed out, these players who have been touched by the hand of God, the ones who can go out and have all the physical traits and suddenly show up on tour as fully formed adults, they can make the jump. That's the whole point of what he's been doing. Why would you delay that?
I'm not saying I think he will. I especially think now that he's withdrawn from Torrey Pines, maybe a week is enough to get settled, to say your goodbyes, to make sure all your boxes are checked, to make sure you have a home base set up, to make sure the money's flowing in the direction that you want it to. And then he can make his big debut next week at a tournament you're going to be at Pebble, the second signature event of the season. But how about also he'll be in the Players Championship and the remainder of the signature events, at least until he would potentially turn pro after the NCAA championship. Yes, I agree. That's the most likely. I just don't necessarily see the rush. And if he is as ambitious of a player and wants to kind of get through some of these and kind of tick off these boxes in amateur golf, I don't see the harm in doing so. Again, it seems incredibly unlikely that he would be playing with his Crimson Tide teammates at the Seabest Intercollegiate instead of playing the Players' Championship, but crazier things have happened. I do think now the fact that he's withdrawn from the Farmers, that may provide him the runway to do so. Otherwise, it would definitely be a little bit too much too soon.
Now, I'm going to say this. I think the story was last week, and I don't remember who it was, but there is a tight end at the University of Miami who just received a ninth year of eligibility to play. And from my perspective, as a 56-year-old, I'm like, yeah, man, I would have liked to have stayed in college and gotten paid NIL money and played football and had a good time for 9 years. I don't know anyone that wouldn't want that. That being said, I only wanted that because I didn't want the rest of my life to start at that point. We keep wanting to push it back. I don't think Nick Dunlap is in that category.
You're probably safe. How about Rex on the macro level? And there's been all sorts of utterances over the past 24 hours. Like, did you see this coming? And in some respects, you kind of could. I mean, you can take any event over the past, let's call it decade, and there has been some sort of amateur flash. You know, you think of Patrick Cantlay shooting 60 at the Travelers. How about John Rahm, wearing that ASU jersey at the Phoenix Open? Kyle Morikawa lost in a playoff as an amateur in a Korn Ferry Tour event. Harris English won before he turned pro on the KFT as well. Like, we've had enough examples. Michael Thorne-Bjornsson, Jared Dutoit, Braden Thornberry, Paul Dunn was the co-leader through 54 holes at the 2015 Open Championship. Like, there's been enough evidence to suggest like these amateurs are rapidly improving and they're getting closer to kind of breaking down that door and winning on the PGA Tour. Why do you think it has finally happened at this point? Is this because Nick Dunlap is so special, or because the environment is now ripe and conducive for younger players?
Well, I think Nick Dunlap is very, very special. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I would have never have seen it coming with him. As I'm doing my research for the show this morning, I realized that he won twice at Alabama. It's no small feat, and good for him. Like, you're going up against really, really good SEC competition, but there's probably players in the NCAA right now and in college golf who have won more than twice that you would think, oh, they probably have a better opportunity. To answer your question, I think it has less to do with Nick Dunlap than it does just how much better college golf is, especially top level college golf programs. And you're talking about the Alabamas and the Georgia Tech and the Wake Forests of the world. Sorry, Georgia. Oof, I know that would have come back. And sorry about that.
Hacker.
How much better they have gotten preparing players for the next level. Like, they've always been really, really good at sort of preparing players to compete against NCAA caliber talent. But I think we've moved beyond that so far. Beyond that, when you hear sort of the tale of Nick Dunlap going back to his early days in Alabama and wanting to be around the best players in the world and just wanting to compete, and he was something of a bit of a range rat, all of those things factor into this. I think they're just better now. I can't say that I saw it coming. Like, I'm sure you did because you follow the amateur game better than I do. I don't even know if you heard it. I gave you the ultimate salute on Golf Today after you
got off. Oh, I heard it.
And I completely rolled my eyes. Like, I could not throw enough rolly eye emojis up. I think it was about 6 months ago when you threw the, oh, Aubert is going to be on the European Ryder Cup team. And I'm like, oh, here he goes again. Because you say it every year about someone's going to end up on the President's or Ryder Cup team. Then I'm like, they're still in college. Like, just let them turn pro. Like, let them put the books away and stop taking exams before we elevate them to world-class players. In this particular case, you saw it coming. Like, I'll call it out. Like, man, I would not have thought at that situation against those two players. I mean, I don't want to gloss over this. You had two Ryder Cuppers going head-to-head, Justin Thomas and Sam Burns. Those guys can play a little bit. To do it head-to-head in that situation, there's no doubt he's ready.
And I think the wild part, Rex, is that, and this is not to diminish the accomplishment or the talent of Nick Dunlap. But if you remove Nick Dunlap from the situation and plugged in 3 to 5 other college studs or these amateur names that have become so familiar over the past year, it probably wouldn't surprise you if those players did this as well. Whether it's Gordon Sargent, who was turning heads at Augusta this year, Michael Thorbjornsson, who's already finished 4th in a PGA Tour event. That was at the 2022 Travelers Championship. Like, he literally this past week finished 11th as a Stanford senior in Dubai in one of his first tournaments in 4 or 5 months after a back issue. Caleb Surratt obviously has now been tied to LIV Golf in John Rahm's team. Ben James won 5 times as a freshman at Virginia. Like, the best player right now in junior golf, the one who's got everyone clamoring and salivating at his potential, is a 15-year-old. It's a 15-year-old by the name of Miles Russell. The kid is a star. And so you look at what junior golf has done through the AJGA. You look at what college golf has done. I think you just look at the landscape of amateur golf in general. Like, the equipment has been optimized in a way that levels the playing field. You look at the golf instruction that these guys are receiving at such a young age. It's become way more sophisticated. Post-Tiger boom, obviously we know that fitness has been prioritized. And I think just college golf in general, if you look at an Alabama or Georgia or Vanderbilt, their schedule, they're playing the best competition every time they tee it up on championship venues with setups by the setup staff there that is exacting and is penal. And so when they get to a U.S. Open, or they get to your kind of run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event, or they play on the Corn Ferry Tour right away after getting through PGA Tour U, like, they are ready to go. Whether it's Ludwig Aubert, whether it's Adrien Dumont de Chassart, the Illinois kid who almost immediately got his PGA Tour card through the KFT, college golf has become the great preparer for all these guys. And I think this is just another byproduct of that. That's not to say that Nick Dunlap is not a special talent. I think it's been proven his championship pedigree is almost unmatched. But if anything, his breakthrough in the desert is just going to embolden even more of these young guys to take advantage of the opportunities that they're bound to get.
Well, and this goes back to our previous conversation. These guys aren't in college to learn how to sell cars, to borrow our friend Todd Lewis's line here. They're in college to learn how to become professional golfers. And I'm not dismissing the education they're getting or why they're there to be with their teams and maybe win championships. But individually, and golf is a very individual sport, it's always going to come down to, how can I become a better golfer? And it's no different than any other sport. You have 5-star athletes showing up at every campus wanting to get to the next level. And that's the case here. I just think the system has gotten so much better. You see it better than I do. But you can look at the level of talent. And as I've said a couple times now, they're just fully formed when they showed up. Like, I mean, early in my career, I'm going to age myself. You did not expect a player to immediately go from college to the PGA Tour. It was always going to be a process. It's not that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the peak for a professional golfer was always early to mid-30s. Now we've probably shifted that. At least if you look at the top 10 of the world rankings, it looks like the peak is kind of 27 to 31-ish. So we moved a half decade up. I would imagine a decade from now, you're even ticking a few years ahead of that. Just an absolutely unbelievable story with Nick Dunlap. We have obviously talked.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World? Like, hey, we came to play. Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could. Would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tons more on golfchill.com, wherever you get your news. I can't believe, Rex, we went 28 minutes without mentioning a Rory McIlroy victory a year after we kind of skewered him for botching the end of this Dubai Invitational with either the three putt from 2 feet.
You said a week after,
the three putt from 2 feet on the back nine and the rope hook into the water on 18. What did you see from Rory, and what does it mean for the rest of his 2024 now that he won his fourth Dubai Desert Classic?
I mean, yeah, he seems to own this place, so I don't know that we should have been surprised at all, even given what happened last week. And I think both of us were, along with Rory, really quick to dismiss what happened last week. I just think that was, I don't want to call it a silly season event, but he clearly had some things he wanted to work on. He wanted to work his way. I think my line last week was, I'm not worried about the state of Rory's game the first week of January or the second week of January. I'm certainly not worried about the state of his game the third week of January. Again, there's only a couple weeks that I'm worried about the state of his game, and those start in April. So I think from Rory's perspective, I don't know how much better he is prepared to sort of end that. We have turned this into a cliche. It's been 10 years. It's been a decade since he won a major championship. How does he turn this into a major championship? Well, there's nothing that he can really use here to turn it into a major. I will say some of the things I saw last week coming off of that runner-up finish the week before were impressive. Like, he was a little sloppy off the tee last week as opposed to where he was at the Dubai Desert Classic. He seemed to have a little bit more focus, especially coming down the stretch. It was not, and he, I think he was 2 under par. It was not an easy day to play golf. So all of those things he can learn from. But look, we're still 2 months away from me being concerned one way or the other for the state of his game.
I like the fact, I mentioned this during our Golf Today hit, I like the fact that he's already knocked off two tournament starts this year, kind of getting his game in order. He's obviously coming back across the pond, and we'll be playing Pebble Beach next week, the second signature event of the PGA Tour schedule, and kind of gearing up for the Masters that way. He talked to, I believe it was John Huggin, ahead of the Dubai Invitational, his season debut, and he said for the first time he's actually going to be playing more heading in to the year's first major. And you and I have kind of had fun on this podcast about it, that he's tried virtually everything to kind of break the streak at Augusta. He's tried playing more. He's tried playing less. He's tried meditating. He tried putting his phone away. He's tried diving into the news. He tried playing the week before. He's tried taking time off heading into. He's literally tried everything. But now he says he's going to be playing 9 or 10 times heading into the Masters, as opposed to his usual 6 or 7. I actually really like that. We've been spoiled for so long by Tiger Woods, who just said he was going to try to peak for the majors. And more often than not, he could. That's an incredibly delicate thing to do. That's an incredibly delicate thing to do, to strike the balance between rest and recovery and preparation and sharpness. I would much rather bank on a guy who has the tournament reps under his belt and who has seen things and who is now entering major season kind of maintaining, as opposed to still trying to progress. So I think that's a really positive development when it comes to Rory, where if he can get his game exactly where he wants it in March, I like his chances to kind of knock off that first major, as opposed to always building towards something. Does that make sense?
It does, twofold. I think first and foremost, we need to point out that he's probably playing more this year just out of necessity, because we have signature events. He wouldn't have necessarily flown all the way back to the other side of the globe to play Pebble Beach next week, but it's a signature event, being the fact that he was an architect of where we are on the PGA Tour. It would probably not be a great look for him to miss not just the first signature event of the season, which was the Century 2 weeks ago, but then Pebble Beach. So his hands were
He forfeited $3 million last year when the RBC Heritage was a mandatory designated event.
Again, I think this is part of this is certainly by necessity. Like, he can't be missing the first two when you're the one that came up with this system that's been widely criticized by the rank and file on the PGA Tour. So before I give him complete credit on that front, I'll also say that I go back to last year when he finished runner-up at the match play event in Austin leading up to the Masters, and hearing him talk about he felt like everything was in perfect place. I don't think there's a magic formula. There clearly was for Tiger Woods. And he is clearly going to be the example we always point at. I don't think it's fair. Like, we make it sound so easy that, oh, you just have to play your best golf 4 weeks out of the year. It's like you're just rolling the dice at some point. Yes, you want to show up every day, but your body feels different. You're going to different golf courses. You're playing in different environments. You're playing off of different grasses. All of these things factor into it. Yeah, it's great that he got an early season victory, and it's certainly going to make the rest of the season be a little bit easier, because now you can sort of play your way into it. If you don't have your best stuff at Pebble Beach, it's all right. I keep moving towards Riviera and beyond that, but you can't read anything into it now.
I do think it is important to get the ball rolling for 2024. Certainly a good sign. Gets us something to talk about. Most certainly, Rex, it actually was quite a busy week. We had an amateur winning. You had Roy winning. You had Lydia Ko winning on the LPGA. I know you had her on the show on Monday, moved within 1 point now of inclusion in the very exclusive LPGA Hall of Fame. You had Travis Kelce scoring 2 touchdowns for the Chiefs. But you also had JT popping up. He was in the final group alongside Dunlap and Sam Burns. You had Cam Young, who failed to capitalize yet again and win another PGA Tour or the DP World Tour with a poor final round in Dubai. What else stood out to you miscellaneous-wise from the world of golf in the past week?
Well, I do want to touch on JT real quick, because he withdrew. Today's Monday. He withdrew from this week's event at Torrey Pines, and he was able to do that because of his finish at the American Express. Moved him up 5 spots in the world ranking to 23rd. He's also, I think, 3rd on the Aon Swing 5 list. So he's pretty much guaranteed to get into the next signature events. And this is going to be an ongoing thing until he either wins again or moves high enough in the world ranking. It's not going to be an issue, because he was 28. If he were to have fallen out of the top 30, and all of a sudden he's in a precarious spot. Now, Pebble Beach and Riviera, they need to give him sponsor exemptions. Those are going to be limited. We've talked, you know, a lot about that. So it was a good week for him, not just because he was able to, again, knock some rust off, but he was able to put himself in a position that he could take this week off and not worry about getting into Pebble Beach or Riviera.
He looks good. JT looks good. It took him a whole one start in 2024 to accomplish something that he didn't even do, Rex, in 2023, and that was to get a top three finish. His iron play, which had fallen off last year, looked plenty sharp. Obviously, there's still a little bit to clean up. The water ball on 11
putting
was a mess. Putting made just one birdie on the outward nine when he could have applied a lot of pressure early on Dunlap. But I think the arrow is pointing back up. It's good to see a mega talent like JT back in good form.
But my favorite was Lydia Ko. As you pointed out, we had her on Golf Today, and she is by far my favorite player to interview on the LPGA Tour, just because she, in my opinion, is their version of Rory McIlroy, that there aren't any unspoken thoughts, that if you want to kind of dig into a nerve, she's more than willing to sit and talk about it. And our colleague, Bethann Nichols, she did an amazing story last night talking about how last year was kind of a season filled with tears for Lydia. She didn't win after an early season event on the LET in Saudi Arabia. She sort of kind of tied herself into knots trying to figure out why she couldn't put herself back in a position to do this, to get that 20th win. And I kind of pointed out on the show today that the 20 is a magic number. There's a reason why the PGA Tour chose to make 20 PGA Tour wins. That's when you get your lifetime exemption onto the PGA Tour. I think on both circuits, we can agree that, man, that you've accomplished something if you've had a chance to win 20 times. He moves within 1 point of the LPGA Hall of Fame, which is baffling to me. That's a whole different conversation. But the part that I like, and I think it was Damon who pointed out the synergy of this, she can also get 1 point if she wins an LPGA event or if she wins the gold medal. And she has finished silver and bronze in the Olympics. And this would be such a fitting way. I'm not saying I don't want her to win until we get to Paris later this year, but it would be a cool way for me to spend that week in Paris.
It almost seemed, I mean, Lydia Ko, it kind of followed that Jordan Spieth trajectory where she went into the wilderness for a couple years and she'd kind of forgotten, or at least perhaps thought that the LPGA Hall of Fame was out of reach. But she had such a great season in 2022. She won the CME Tour Championship. She had the lowest scoring average, that all of a sudden it became a possibility. And then, as you mentioned, like, just played really poorly. 0 wins in 20 starts, only had a handful of top 10s, couldn't even defend her title at the LPGA season finale. And so I think it's incredibly important for a player who has made no secret about the fact that she wants to have a second career. She just got married. She's talked about having a family. She's always talked about retiring early. Like, to be able to move now onto the threshold.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nesto, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nesto, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Of immortality on the LPGA, I think is a big deal, and it's certainly going to be one of the main storylines to watch for the remainder of the year, especially since you got that in her season debut. Rex, what are you planning to do for the rest of the week in Connecticut? You will not have your usual tools. You will not have your usual grills. Like, what's the plan? Does anyone want to hang out with you? Are you gonna shovel snow? Are you gonna go to the gym? What's the plan this week in Connecticut?
Spend as little time outside as possible. I can tell you, I flew into White Plains and I ran from the terminal to my rental car. Like I thought, okay, I have a jacket on. I had my little beanie cap on. I'm good to go.
Watch out for black ice.
Nope. Hit me in the face. Slapped me right across the face. That was not enjoyable. I won't be shoveling any snow. Spending a lot of time probably in the gym, hanging out at our place. I don't see me venturing outside. There's not a lot to do around here. So I'm not quite sure. Well, I'm staying in Greenwich. So you guys are great with your messages. Please let me know what I should be doing in Greenwich the rest of the week.
Yeah, I'm not sure this will be a message sponsored by the Connecticut Tourism Bureau. But we do appreciate your thoughts. Rex, thank you for asking about my personal life, just buttoning up a story from last week's podcast where I'd mentioned somewhat ominously that I was going to get my biometric screening, and that was potentially going to dictate not just my diet and what was going to be on the grill, but also potentially my life. Good news, I'm not dying. It does not appear to be imminent, at least, but there are some lifestyle changes that I need to make in order to get those numbers back down to where they probably should be. For a 36-year-old, you called my BMI "quote embarrassing," which was hard. That was hard to hear from someone I love. But the total cholesterol numbers were okay, not great. Blood pressure numbers were okay, not great. I've learned about some other family history, so medication is certainly in my future. But I think I have a new philosophy where during the week I want to eat as healthy and as clean as possible. And then on the weekend, I still want to go ham. I still want to hammer beers. I still want to fire up the offset. I still want to eat all the red meat in the world. That's my new plan. And I would appreciate everyone's thoughts and prayers as I embark on this new plan.
T's and P's. No, I was not going to bring it up because I feel like some things we do offline should stay offline. And when you sent me your card of your test results, there was so much red on that card. A lot of
exclamation points. My God.
It was like your car engine had blown up. That's what it looked like, or at least when my car engine blows up. Yes, the BMI did not look great. You're right. The cholesterol, it was better than I thought it was going to be, considering how you sort of let yourself go the last few years. If we're being honest, and let's have the heart-to-heart right here in front of all of our fans. Like, you know, there was a time in your life, and it wasn't that long ago, when you were on a strict diet. I was proud of you. You weren't drinking. You weren't eating red meat. You were leading your best life, and you have since fallen so far.
No, sad. It was not my best life. It was my healthiest life. It was my cleanest life. But to say that was my best life, no. I would wish a vegan diet on no one. Life has too much to explore. There are too many delicious foods to be saddled with just eating strictly plant-based foods. I will not stoop to that level. I can just make some healthier choices during the week. Yeah, potentially a couple more games of pickleball during the week to get my heart beaten as well. But no, it was somewhat of a wake-up call. but I also was somewhat heartened.
You knew it was coming.
That it wasn't completely out of control. Let's put it that way.
Well, you knew it was coming. We've had enough conversations about this. And I will say, and this kind of goes to, we had a, I don't know if you saw it. So we do like a tree burning, Christmas tree burning. Yeah, we did it on Saturday night before I left to come up here. It's all the real Christmas trees from the neighborhood. They all get stacked in my backyard. I'll send you some photos. It's quite a terrifying.
Right next to a national forest, folks.
Right next to a national forest. I will say we had not one, not two, but three professional firefighters at our tree burning this year with multiple hoses already primed and ready to go. So we know.
Very responsible.
Trying to be very responsible. But I will say this. She cooked her soup and whatever she did and other people brought. So I've gotten sort of this chili recipe that I smoke. Down to a science. And she's like, well, but you have to double because we're having so many people coming over. And I go, double doesn't fit into my smoker. She's like, well, then do it on the stove. And I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. No, I do it on the smoker. That's what makes it so good. And so it was one of those fights that I'm going to hear about for a long time. Cause I could not have been more dismissive. I could not have been like, no, you don't understand. Stop talking. Stop talking right now. You don't get it. Like, I can't do this on the stove. Because if you do it on the stove, that's just chili. And no one really wants chili. You want smoked chili, right?
You want smoked chili. You want your clothes to smell like it.
Yeah.
You want that charcoal flavor. You want that hickory wafting over and around all of the beans that you have in your chili. I'm with you. I don't cook anything inside, but especially not chili. Once you go smoke chili, folks,
everyone loved it. Everyone
never go back.
Look, couldn't have two helpings. Sorry, wish everyone could have had two helpings, but that's what we get. Either that, or we're not going to have it at all because I'm not making it on the stove.
It should be another good viewing weekend for you guys if you are sports fans. The Farmers Insurance Open programming note ends on Saturday evening in prime time, clearing the way completely for the NFL Conference Championships on Sunday, as mentioned. About 25 minutes ago on this podcast, Rex and I will soon be taping our podcast on Sunday night for delivery, wherever you get your podcasts on Monday morning, and then doing a sort of preview type podcast on Wednesday afternoon that you guys should be able to get Wednesday evening and Thursday morning to get you primed for that week's PGA Tour action. Look forward to getting some feedback from you guys, whether or not you like that. For the rest of the week, make sure you guys catch Rex co-hosting with Damon Hack. You got the Farmers. You got Lydia Ko's quest for LPGA immortality. You have Demo Day and the PGA Show going on from Orlando. So plenty to whet your appetite as a fellow dimplehead. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys do the drill. Make sure you go to NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news and notes in the world of golf. We'll be back next week when Rex prepares to hit the road for the first time in 2024. He'll be attending Pebble, but we'll give a full recap of the Farmers. Looking forward to it. Have a great rest of your week.
So cold.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Don't give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.